Okay, we're on page 1062, second line from the end of the page. Okay, this mitzvah, the mitzvah we're going to be learning now, the Banu Chumash, is the mitzvah of what's called Yibum and Chalitza. Just as a simple introduction, in English it's called levirate marriage. I don't know why it's called that, but that's the English word for it. Levirate, trust me, I don't know. Levirate marriage. Now the case is, a man is married to a woman, he dies without children, so then is, the guy's brother has to do yibum, meaning he has to marry the wife, his sister-in-law, which is normally not allowed, by the way. It's mamish, one of the ervas, it's a biblically forbidden. But because the guy had no children, Hashem wanted to rebuild the deceased brother's family and name. This is the mitzvah of the Torah, that the brother should marry the deceased wife.
If single. If the brother is single or married.
No, even if he's married. Even if he's married, because in those days we're allowed to have a few wives. Today we'll learn we only do chalitza today. One of the reasons, there's a lot of, we'll discuss it soon. But I'm just giving a general introduction. A guy is married to a woman, he dies childless, okay? So the Torah says his brother needs to marry the guy's wife.
What if the woman had a problem and she could not conceive?
If she's barren.
It doesn't matter. There's still a mitzvah. Again, let's see what the case is, what the general law is, and then we'll go into the details. So the Torah says like this. Ki yeshu achim yachtov. Two brothers. 1062. Now at the bottom line of the page. Ki yeshu achim yachtov. If two brothers would be sitting together. Umeis achad mehem, and one of the brothers dies. Uvein ein loy, and he has no son. Uvein doesn't mean son, it means no child. Leisia eisha sameis achutza li'izor. This woman cannot marry a outside stranger. Yevama yove yaleha, the brother-in-law should live with her. Velokachal li'isha, he should take her as a wife. V'yibma, and perform this yibum. Okay, which means like this. By the way, it's an interesting thing. You cannot marry your sister-in-law. Normally, you cannot marry your sister-in-law. If two brothers have children, okay, and one of them dies, so the other one cannot marry the sister-in-law.
If they two sisters, two brothers, get married together.
No, that's I'm saying case. Because you can't marry your brother's wife. Even if your brother is gone, you still can't marry his wife. If there's children. If there's no children, then you have the mitzvah of Yibum. But I'm saying if the mitzvah of Yibum doesn't apply, meaning there's children, so then it's biblically forbidden to marry your brother's wife. It's one of the adulterous, incestuous relations, which the kid would be a mamzer and everything else. But an interesting thing, Rashi says, this is all from the Gemara also, the pasuk says, ki yeshu achim yachtov, the brothers sit together. And if they're not together, like, what does it mean? It means if they both are in the world at the same time. In other words, what happens if one brother was married and died, but his brother wasn't born yet? Mm-hmm. His mother was only pregnant with him, but he wasn't born yet. So even though legally it's his brother, mm-hmm. So if he's born, after a while can he do yibum? And the answer is he cannot do yibum, because the Torah says yibum is only when both brothers were alive in the world at the same time. Okay? Now, some commentaries say that what's the connection between this pasuk and the pasuk right before it, that you can't muzzle an animal when it works, when it's plowing, because it says, just like Torah over there is kind, Torah does it out of kindness to the animal, because if an animal's working in the field and he's muzzled, he's not going to be able to eat. It's torture for the animal. So the Torah says, okay, be nice, don't do it. But same thing, one second. Same thing over here. The Torah says that you should be out of kindness to the deceased brother. We want to rebuild his home. That's what the Torah says. Okay, so the brothers are sitting together, one of them dies. She is not allowed to marry anybody else. By the way, when it says Bein Einla, it doesn't only mean a son or a daughter. What happens if a guy has grandkids, but his son or daughter died? There's also no din of Yibum. As long as there's descendants of this person that passed away, children descendants, so then there's no din of Yibum. And if there's no din of Yibum, then it's forbidden to do Yibum. Because again, it's your brother's wife, which is forbidden to be married to.
How about the father-in-law?
Can the father-in-law do Yibum?
Like
Yehuda.
Yehuda.
So
Yehuda.
The Mefarshim write that before Matan Torah, Yibum could have been done with anybody. And therefore, because the third son, Shelah, grew up and Yehuda didn't give him to Tamar for Yibum because he was afraid he'd also die. Mm. So then Tamar said, okay, if that's the case, I'm going to get the father-in-law to do Yibum with me. And that's why she did that whole shtick. Because before Matan, this is what the Mefarshim explained, before Matan Torah, Yibum could have been done with any relative. But after Matan Torah, it's only the brother. But by the way, this is an interesting thing. The Torah says this woman is not allowed to marry anybody else. But I'm saying, until Yibum or Chalitz is done. It says, Laisiya Eishes Hameis, Hachutza Li'izor, she cannot be marrying anybody else. Yavama Yava Yala, the Yibum has to marry her, or take her as a wife, and marry her. Okay? So nobody else can marry her.
She can get him and divorce him right away? The brother? Can he do that?
What?
She get the brother, wife, and divorce it right away.
Can he marry and divorce her?
At the same time.
Well, not right away. You gotta. It's cheaper for the caterer, by the way. If you have a marriage divorce party at the same time,
okay.
You know, you make one party for two birds with one stone. But you're not allowed to do like that.
Yeah.
Okay, now.
You have to. It's just a mitzvah if you do it, right? If you don't do it, it's not.
No, we'll see what you have to do if not. Okay, now. The Chinuch explains like this. What's the reason of this mitzvah? Even though obviously it's a chayk, it's really a logical mitzvah. But the Chinuch many times, with a Rishon, many times tries to explain the logic behind the mitzvah. And he says like this. When a woman and man are married, it's two halves. Okay? Because a woman is created for man, so it's like a half a person. Okay. Now, when the guy dies, so part of his life is still in the wife. And his brother is a part of him. So therefore, the Torah says that you're taking the place of your brother being the woman's second half. Okay? By the way, there's a very interesting practice that's done. We're going to learn, you have to do, today we do chalitza. But what happens, L'mashal? I know cases that this happened to. Let's say it was time behind the Iron Curtain. People who were in Russia and you couldn't get out. Or those countries where it's impossible to get out. And there was a brother in America, yeah, that had a brother in Russia. During the heavy communism, he couldn't get out. And he didn't have any children. And he was getting old and sick. Right? So if he would die, his wife, because the brother can never come to do Yibum or Chalitza, she would be stuck for life. They would be stuck for life. So what they would do sometimes, interestingly, they would divorce her, give her a get. And sometimes it would be a get taking effect. This is a complicated halacha though. Taking effect 1 minute before he dies. He doesn't want to divorce her today. I mean, he's still living for a while. So they would actually write a get that the woman should be divorced before he dies, that she shouldn't be stuck with the problem of Yibum. Which could be could be a very big problem. Right? Or there's another issue. Because what happens if a guy dies and his brother is 1 year old?
19.
Even today it's a problem.
Yeah.
Right? Don't forget, in old days people died young, yeah? Mm-hmm. So you can have a 20-year-old You can have a 20-year-old that can have a 1-year-old brother, right? Now, that 1-year-old brother cannot marry her, and he cannot do chalitza. He's a baby. So now this woman is stuck, really, until the kid's old enough to do chalitza. So he has to be bar mitzvah. He has to be bar mitzvah. So you have to wait 13 years, which is a lot of times a very difficult thing for a woman to wait. She's young, she wants to get remarried and have kids, and it's still going to be 13 years or whatever. So then sometimes they would write a get. I mean, this is not because they didn't like each other, because, on the contrary, they wanted to savor the torture of the Yibum or Chalita process that would be difficult to do or impossible to do. Or you don't know, a guy has it, probably doesn't know where he is.
They write a get on behalf of the child?
No.
Before the
guy is married to a woman, but his brother is a baby.
Before he gets married.
So he'll divorce his wife.
Before he dies. How does he know when he's going to die?
So I'm saying the ways of doing it that it becomes effective 1 hour before he
not
dies.
If he's sick or something.
Yeah, whatever. I know case, by the way, that it happened to.
Who knows what if they're going to die with
him? We're doing it for...
No, you make a get that it should become effective.
Oh,
got it.
They did it also when they went to a cruise or something, or they went to a voyage. See.
They didn't write. The Gemara says something else. And this is contradicts the movie about David and Bathsheba. Yeah, because the movie is a Torah from Sinai. If you don't believe me, ask the movie guys. When David and Mel's soldiers went to war, before they went to war, they divorced their wives. Arguing Rashi and Tyson was in a condition, not in a condition. They divorced their wives. Why? Because many times people didn't come back from war. Right? There was no newscasts. Sometimes they were taken captives. Sometimes they died in the battlefield. And they were just buried on the spot. Right? And the wife would have no proof that the husband's dead. And she would be stuck for the rest of her life as an aguna, not being able to remarry. So what they did was, this is what the Gemara said, David HaMelech instituted, Kol Yetzim Lachem Ez Beis David, Kaysev Get Krisis Liishtoi, whoever went to battle in David HaMelech's war, divorced his wife, again, whether it was on a condition returns or not, there's an argument in Rashi and Tosfos in the Gemara, but basically that she shouldn't be stuck being in a guna. That, the same thing with Chalitza, but it's a different story. Okay, so this woman is negatively, I mean, it's a negative command for her to actually marry anybody else. Okay.
They go with the firstborn, huh? If you have three brothers, four
brothers.
So
the din is like this. So how do you do with Yibum? The Torah says, you go, let's say there are five brothers. Yeah. Which one does Yibum?
The first.
Okay, so you go to the oldest. You say, hey, Jack, you want to do Yibum? Not interested. Because we'll soon learn, in order to do Yibum, it has to be only for the sake of the mitzvah. Not for the money, not for the looks, not, it has to be only mamish. We'll discuss it soon. So the bottom line is, the five brothers, you go to the oldest brother and say, Yibum? No. Next guy? No. Third guy? Yes? Okay, so he does it. You go to all five? No. Yeah? So then Bezli goes to the back to the oldest and says, either do Yibum or Chalitza, your choice. But it's your, you know, the responsibility is on the oldest brother, but you don't make it only on the oldest brother. First, you start with the oldest, ask what their opinion, what they want to do it or not. If you refuse. But bottom line is, if they all say no, so the oldest brother has to either marry or do Chalitza, one of the two. We'll learn the whole process of Chalitza. Okay, no, we're going to get to it, what it means. Okay, there's also a question in the Gemara, if this woman did go to somebody else and make kedushin with them, is she married to the other guy? That's a whole argument in the Gemara. Okay, but let's see what the Torah says here. V'hoya, and then it will be, Habachar Asher Telet, the firstborn child that this woman would have, Yaakum Al Shem Achiv Ames, will succeed to the name of the dead brother. We'll see what that means. V'leimacha Shmei Miyisrael, that his name should not be erased. So if you learn this pasuk literally, What does it mean? What does it seem to imply? That the first baby they have, you have to name after the brother-in-law.
Correct.
Right? That's what the pasuk seems to imply. But the Gemara says it's not true. You do not have to name the boy after the brother. And they even prove it from a story in Tanakh with Boaz. Boaz did with Ruth Yibum. And what was their son? Oved. Not the Machlein or Chilyein, whatever the husband was, that Ruth's husband was.
What
1 minute. What does it mean? Yalkum al Shem Achiv Ameis? It means he becomes like the firstborn son of the one that died. He inherits the father. He inherits the father. That's what it means. Doesn't mean the Rashi say Yito Nachas Hames
Benichsei Aviv. Shem is name. It's not Shem.
Huh?
The meaning. Of
yeah, but that's what I'm saying. The Gemara learns. The Gemara discusses, and the Gemara says it doesn't mean to actually give the name. It doesn't mean that because we see from the Torah that they didn't do it. And they didn't name the boy by the name of the deceased. And that's what this is what the Gemara said. This is the Gemara explaining what the Torah means. Which is, again, like everything else, when the oral Torah explains the written Torah. Okay, but you have like this. What happens? Another interesting thing. A guy is married to three wives, biblical times, yeah? Or Talmudic times. Obviously, he couldn't have children, and none of the wives had children. Okay? He had wife A, B, C. And Reuven was married to A, B, C. A had no kids, B had no kids, C had no kids. And then he dies.
Then you have to marry all three wives.
So, do you have to do Yibum or Chalitza to all three? So then there's no. You do one Yibum or Chalitza to one of them, it frees them all.
Wholesale.
No, but you don't do it. No, you don't even do it to all three. You, by doing Chalitza Yibum to one, Gemara says it frees all the others. That's done or not.
What if you decide to marry one and you don't want the other?
Oh, then that's fine. You don't have to marry, that's what I'm saying. You don't have to marry all three. You either have to marry one or do chalitza to one.
It's interesting. Like which one of the two pick it up? That's the problem.
No, but the Gemara says, and we'll see if she doesn't want what the din of chalitza is, but the bottom line is Bezdin would advise the guy whether he should do it or not. Okay, give you an example. If the brother was 15. And the guy's wife, the guy that died, his wife was 60. Okay? Bezin's gonna say, do Yibin, the 15-year-old is gonna marry a 60-year-old, have to take care of her in the old age home. So then Bezin would suggest, advise him to do Chalitza. Or whatever, if the Bezin see it's not a good match, you know, they would. Or, there's an interesting thing, what happens if he can't do chalitza, yibum or chalitza. Give a very simple example. Two brothers married two sisters. Right? Okay. Now, if one dies, if the brother does yibum, he's basically marrying his wife's sister, which is biblically forbidden. It's incest. So then, there's no Yibum and no Chalitza. Because the fact that he's not allowed to do Yibum, in other words, the Gemara is going to learn from here, the Gemara learns that if you could do Yibum, if you're allowed to do Yibum, marrying her, and you don't want to, then you have to do Chalitza. But if Torah doesn't allow you to marry her, because it's your relative, that you're not allowed to marry, so then you don't have to do Chalitza either. Because the obligation of Chalitza is only when you have a case of Yibum. But if the Torah says you can't do Yibum, so then it doesn't matter. By the way, another interesting thing. What happens if the only kid the guy had who died was a mamzer? So he still doesn't have to do Yibum anywhere. Because he had a kid. Still a kid. Still this kid. Okay. Okay. It doesn't mean Yibam.
How could it be his kid and be Mazus?
Huh?
How could it be his kid from his wife and be Mazus?
Because he
married. He had relations with a married woman. Yeah?
But they're not married.
But they married after that.
No, even if they didn't marry.
No, if you don't marry,
if a guy, let's go back a second. If a guy was married to a woman and had kids, okay, divorced or died, whatever, then he marries another woman, and the other woman has no kids. Correct? There's no din of yibum. He has kids from a previous marriage. Doesn't have to be kids from this wife. Ubein einle means any kid that he has. So somebody created a mamzer somewhere else, out of wedlock, whatever, right? He created a mamzer. And now he's married to a woman, yeah, and he dies. So the fact that there's a kid, even though the kid's a mamzer, it's still his kid and his wife, even though she didn't have children from him. The main thing is that he needs to have a child not to do yibum.
Two names.
It doesn't matter, it could be from anybody.
But it just continues, promotes continuation of the generation. Two brothers have 50% of their chromosomes in common.
That's what he said. Because a woman is, and the husband are half, and the brother is half. So the guy died. The Torah says, let's get the percentages going. Okay. Now, what happens if the guy doesn't want to marry her? But we said like this, one thing is very important to keep in mind over here. And that's it. And that is, 1 second, let's. The din of Yibum, okay, 1 second. Let's see all the details here, 1 second. Here. Why does the Gemara say, if you look in the pasuk like this, the top line of the 1064 says, "Leisia Eisha Mesa Chutzal Yisod, Yavama Yave Yaleh, that the Yibum should leave with her, or the Kachta Kachal El Isha, and then again it's a Viyibma. It says he should do Yibum with her and marry her. Why does the Torah again say Viyibma and he should do Yibum with her? It just says you do Yibum. It's an extra word." From there, the Gemara learns out, by the way, that it has to be done in a way that he's only doing for the mitzvah. Meaning, if he's doing it for beauty or for any other reason why he's marrying this girl, it's forbidden. And he says, if he really wanted to do that the proper way, then a God promises him a baby boy, and that's why it says Vahoya, which is an expression of Simcha. But if he's not going to have that purity, he should not marry, he should do a chalitza. And that's why today, for a lot of reasons, we do chalitza. Number one, if a guy's married, he can't take a second wife. Secondly, he needs to have a pure intention of the mitzvah, not for anything else. So therefore, today we do chalitza. There's a whole ritual, we're going to learn the ritual with a shoe, with the special type of a shoe, and spitting, and the whole process.
Cinderella.
Yeah. But Cinderella's husband didn't die. It wasn't a different story. Okay, now, v'imla yachbei tzaiish, what happens if the guy doesn't want l'kachas as yivimte to take this girl, his sister-in-law, as a wife? Okay? So what should he do? But also yivimte hasha'ara, the sister-in-law goes to the gate where the bezdin is, and she says, me'en yivami, my brother-in-law, refuses lahakim la'achiv shem b'Yisrael, to establish a name for his brother in Israel, la'ava yabmi, he didn't want to do yibim to me. Okay, let's read in the nephew psukim, and we'll discuss what goes on over here. The Karolei Ziknei Irei and the elders of the city call him, and they speak to him. Okay? And they speak to him, and they discuss with him, and from here we learn out, by the way, the elders talk to him, maybe it's not a good idea to do Yibam. It is a good idea to do Yibam. V'dibru ev amad v'amar, and he still stands by his thing, and he says, he stands up and he says, l'chafatzi l'gachto. I don't want to take her. Even after they speak to him, he says, you know what? I don't want to marry this girl. I don't want. So what happens? Nikshi yivim te'elav leinei askenim. The sister-in-law approaches him before the eyes of the elders. V'cholta nala mi'aragle. She has to remove his shoe from his foot. V'yarka b'fanav. And she spits before him.
What?
Relax. V'anta v'amah. And she answers and she says, kocha yohasa li'ish. This is... What do you say? Inappropriate. You'll see inappropriate. Kocha yohasa li'ish. This is what you do to a man, Ashalayivna as Beisachiv, that doesn't want to build his brother's home. And the pasuk concludes, V'nikrish may be Yisrael, his name shall be proclaimed in Israel, Beis Chalutz Anol, the house of the one whose shoe was removed. Meaning basically, they publicize the fact that this guy didn't want to do even with his wife, with the sister. Okay, so the Torah basically gives to us.
At that time, shoe had was synonymous with somebody's dignity or something.
Yes, we'll see all the details in a second. Okay, there's a lot of dinim of... What's the fun?
Rabbi.
What?
What happened to money if the brother has a lot of money? Is it get to his brother or is it get...
No, that's what the Torah says.
Yes. What happened?
If there's Yibum, mm-hmm. So no other descendants get the money. In other words, what happens if a guy dies without children? Mm-hmm. Who inherits?
Yeah.
His brothers.
His brothers.
His father. There's a whole order, right? Father inherits. Brothers inherit. If not, uncles inherit. There's a whole Seder.
How about the wife?
But by Yiva... No, according to the Torah, wife doesn't inherit.
Is that anything?
No, sorry. But, by the way, it's another interesting thing. The wife still has to be supported from the estate. In other words, she doesn't get inheritance. A wife does not inherit the husband. Okay? But the kids or the brother, whoever inherits the money, has to support him. So here the Torah didn't want, because of the Yibam story, in other words, like this. If a guy dies, single guy, no relatives, yeah? Who gets his money?
Family.
The family. What the order? The father, the brother. What the order? The Torah says. But here the Torah says no. The brothers and the father are not going to get the money. We want to do Yibum, and they're going to have a child, and he's going to. That child will get everything from the father, right? Instead of. But what happens if they do chalitza? Uh-huh.
Yes.
Then who inherits according to Torah? The brothers, the father, whoever.
And the woman doesn't get anything.
Yes.
She gets supported for life.
What if they're like, they don't
want to
support her?
No, Bezdin makes you. We're talking about the court system.
Security.
The wife gets
support. What if the woman doesn't want to get married to the brothers?
So in biblical law, the Bezdin probably would advise the guy not to do it.
Correct.
But halachically, if his intention was pure and everything else, they would probably force it to, I believe they would force it. Because the Torah says you have to build the brother's name. You have to build the name of the husband.
Correct.
Through the kids. Okay. So now let's discuss, these things like this. Okay. We said, Yibum is preferable. Okay. Now what happens over here with the Chalitza?
Chalitza doesn't have the mitzvah? Or just Yibum?
No, it's Chalitza is a mitzvah. The Torah says, there's no Yibum, the mitzvah is to do chalitza. It's one of the 613 mitzvahs. Okay, now. Why is...
You scared? I have to go,
sorry. What?
I have to go.
Okay, fine. Successful meeting. Buy low, sell high. Okay, so the commentators explain the logic of why did he take off his shoe? Why take off the shoe? Why the shoe? Because when a mourner takes off the shoe. Shoe that's a sign of comfort. So the mourner takes off. So Rabbeinu Bachaya says, by removing the leather shoe, a symbol of mourning, and the Sephorna says, she spits into him to show a sign of contempt. That's disgusting, that he's not interested in rebuilding his brother's home. Okay, so let's discuss now what this mitzvah chalitza is. Okay? Now, from this psukim, the fact that the pasuk says the woman should go up to the gate where the elders are, that's what the pasuk says, right? But also yivimta ashara laskenim. Why does it say she goes up to the gate to the elders? It should say she goes to the elders. Every word over here is going to teach us many, many laws. The first law we learn from this pasuk is that the dayanim have to, a day before the chalitza, they have to set a designated place where they're going to be doing it. Because the Torah says she goes up to the gate where the elders are. It should say go to the elders. Right? The Torah's teacher, no, there has to be a set. And it has to be verbally. Meaning that the three dayanim, the three judges of Beis Din, say to the man and the woman that are doing this chalitza, exactly the place we're going to be doing it. And like he says, the custom is the mincha before the day of, let's say you're going to be doing chalitza Monday morning, right? So Sunday at mincha, they announce the place where they're doing it. And the minig is many times to do it in a big public place that everybody should know about it. And that's what they do. Now, the din is, because the woman has to spit, it has to be pure spit.
What do you mean pure?
Nothing else in it. You know, it's just spit that she gets from her mouth. So the din is, by the way, he says like this, she's not allowed to eat or drink anything, even to rinse her mouth, until the chalitza is done. Okay?
From when? From mincha until the following day?
No. From the time she wakes up in the morning, no eating, no drinking, no rinsing the mouth. Okay? Because it has to be straight from the spit, because it, from the actual spit. And she should not spit any time until she comes to the Beis Din. Okay? And it says also that the guy that's doing chalitza, she washes his foot before the chalitza to make sure it's clean, that the shoe can go easy on and off. Okay? Another, by the way, it's an interesting thing. When they do chalitzas today, I regret, I was offered to see a few chalitzas and it just didn't work out because of the minyan. I said I can't do it, and I regret that I didn't do it. Because I would love to see a chalitza in process. It doesn't happen too often, by the way. But they do chalitza early in the morning.
Because
she doesn't go hungry.
She doesn't go hungry and she doesn't rinse her mouth and she, you know, she feels terrible. It's like a fast day, but even worse. You know. So therefore they would do it early in the morning. They would do it like 6:30, 7, you know, after day. After sunrise. They would do it as early as possible to get the process done that she should be able to go home and eat.
And it has to be done in the synagogue?
It's done, it says the custom is to do it in a place where that everybody, people would know about it.
And the guy should feel embarrassed about it.
Right. Or people should know that this woman is now allowed to remarry somebody else. Not remarry, marry somebody else.
So this feeling symbolizes,
We'll get into the details. Now. The chalitza is done only during the day because right away she collects the ksuba and you can't do it on Shabbos and Yom Tov. And he says they don't do it either in Erev Shabbos or Yom Tov. Next thing is, they need to recognize that this is the brother's, the deceased brother. In other words, there has to be legitimate proof that this guy's his brother. Okay? Okay, even if there's one witness, it's enough to testify that it's the brother. They sit there, and they have another two people sitting at the side. Okay, when they do chalit, what I just want to say also, they need to know, there's another interesting problem that would happen, not nowadays so much, but in the time of the Gemara, there's a very big problem. In the time of the Gemara, a guy said, we're allowed to have many wives. Okay? In those days, guys who traveled had wives in different cities. They had wives in different cities.
Temporary.
So you can have a lot of half-brothers. Now, the din of chalitza, by the way, is only a brother from the same father. Brothers from the same mother don't count as a brother that needs to do yibam or chalitza. But if it's brothers from the same father, so in the time of the Gemara, you have a lot of cases, and the Gemara is interesting, that the Gemara speaks about inheritance, that all of a sudden somebody died, and all of a sudden this guy comes from overseas, and he says, I'm also a brother. It's not like by the wills today, prince, all of a sudden there's 3,000 relatives. Mm-hmm. Or as the expression goes in America, where there's a will, there's a relative. In Taurus, when there's a will, there's a way. But in America, it's when there's a will, there's a relative. So brothers would come. It was interesting. Brothers would come from different countries and say, I'm a brother. And the brother would say, no, you're not. Because he's talking about getting inheritance. The more brothers there are, the less each one gets. Correct. Right? So, in fact, the Gemara says an interesting thing. What happens if there's two brothers, right, and all of a sudden a third brother pops in and says, hello, I'm your brother. One brother says, no, you're not. And the other brother says, yes, you are. So now the question, what do you do with inheritance? Mm. So sometimes there would be dividing, listen to this, they would divide the inheritance 50-50, and the guy that says he has a brother would divide his 50-50. So this guy got 50%, this guy got 25%.
And the oldest brother gets twice as much as the other brother.
Right. That means if there's five boys, you divide it into six.
Correct.
One part gets 2/6, and all the other brothers get 1/6.
Right.
Okay. But that's only if the oldest is a boy.
Girls, not girls nothing yet, nothing.
Girls get supported. Oh, and also, by the way, there's another din that we learned. They have to wait 90 days after the guy dies to do chalitza. Because like we learned by Mincha, maybe she was pregnant and she didn't know about it. So they had to wait 90 days.
92.
Right? Well, day of death and day of marriage, so it's 92. But Bezen had to wait 90 days to make sure the woman's not pregnant. Okay? And the boy has to be at least 13, and the girl at least has to be 12. Okay? And then they come and they start the chalitza process. So it's a very interesting shoe. In fact, I didn't bring it, but this form, they have the picture of the shoe. It was a very interesting shoe. It had to be a leather shoe with two straps. And the way they ended up tying it, it's not like you normally tie a shoe. You have to tie it, each strap around the foot, and you tie it up a little bit, up the foot, the whole process. And then you knot it, and then she has to undo the knot with one hand and pick up his foot with the other hand. There's a whole procedure of the chalitza to make sure it's done 100% right. So it has to be a soft leather shoe, and it can't be torn, and the fact that it says, me'al ragli, means it has to be on top of the foot, not under the foot, and you have to do the whole foot until part way up the leg, and it's all the details, unbelievable here.
This is halacha?
Biblical halacha. By the way, if you don't do this right, it's like writing a get incorrectly, the woman's not allowed to marry. Over there, though, by a get, if it's done incorrect and the get is not kosher, she's a married woman still and she's committing adultery. Here she's doing a negative commandment to marrying somebody else before having the proper chalitza. Okay, so then she has to spit on the ground, and there has to be a lot of spit. She has to...
Oh, God.
Sounds gross. Okay, but this is the procedure to permit the woman.
If he married somebody, is mamzer?
No, because it's only a negative commandment. So she has to get a lot of spit, that when she spits, it should be noticeable to the judges. And then they say the pasuk kachel yasala ish, and you read it standing, and you have to make sure the woman understands what she's saying and what's going on, and she has to understand, both of them, that the purpose of this whole chalitza process is to free her and allow her to marry somebody else. Well, this is basically, in a nutshell, but again, there's a whole lot of gemaras written on chalitza. In fact, I'll just give you an example. When, before the Rebbe, when the Rebbe was still son-in-law of the previous Rebbe, he was very incognito. He was, very hidden. He didn't go around showing off his learning. He went very simple. He didn't want anybody to know who he was.
Low-key.
Very low-key. In fact, even by his wedding, the previous Rebbe told him he should speak to a certain big Rav in learning. So he spoke to him once. And then the guy wanted to speak to him again. He was so impressed. He said, no, my father-in-law told me to speak to you once. I don't have to speak to you anymore. Mm-hmm. He didn't do this. Anyway, when he was in Berlin, he needed a smicha paper to keep him in the country. This is wartime, don't forget he was going. So, he comes to a big rabbi in Berlin, and he asks him for a smicha. Now the guy didn't know who he was. So, he said, come on, I can't give you just smicha like this. You know what? Go home, learn this page of Gemara, and come back tomorrow, I'll test you on the Gemara. If you know the Gemara, I'll give you the smicha. So the Rebbe said to him, that's not the way you do smicha. Let's talk in learning. So the guy says, we're shocked. He said, we test to the Rebbe, what do you want to talk about? So the Rebbe told him, you just gave out a book. Okay? And in your book, you have a whole thing about a left-footed guy. Which foot does he put the shoe on? The whole discussion. Now, normally you put
right
the shoe...
Hand, right hand on the sandwich. What's left footed?
Well, you have to put your right foot on first.
There's a lot of laws, by the way, pertaining to feet.
Then you have to
like chalitza. Okay?
Usually we jump in on our left foot, though.
No.
Our left foot usually is stronger than our
In halacha it says, how do you know if you're right-footed or left-footed? Is when you stand and you just start working, which foot do you put first? Today, basically, in a practical sense, left-footed decide like which foot do you kick with? Which foot do you have more power? Do you kick
right
somebody with the right? Well, if you play soccer, you use both feet. But still, you throw with the right or left.
Right.
So according to many dinim, if you're a left-footed person, is told by where you kick a ball. So then it would be relevant to many dinim, by the way, if you're right-footed, left-footed. Like, which foot do you put... When you get dressed, right, if you're wearing pants, yeah? You put your right leg into the pants, and then your left leg. When you take off your pants, you take off the left leg first, and then the right. But what happens if you're left-footed?
It's still the same.
No, not the same. No, not necessarily. You would do the left.
Can we go over these one of these days? Like, which side of the bed you have to get up on?
We did those already 30 times. Okay, anyway.
I was in here.
Well, which side do you get up?
Right.
Just don't get up, like they say in America, on the left side of the bed. Don't get up cranky.
Right, always right.
When you're looking at your bed,
the right,
on the
side,
right side.
Sleep on your
side.
Couch.
Okay. Then you want to sleep, left.
So fortunate, that's
not true. Well, I'm just sleep on a park bench.
Oh, really?
You still get up. Okay, whatever. We'll learn that. Okay, so the spit and then everything has to be done correctly. And, okay, that's basically the din of chalitza. I mean, look, and you can learn it for a million years. Okay, let's just start a little bit of the next pasuk.
Something cleaner than the
spitting. It's not too much cleaner, by the way. Ki yinatzu anashim yachtav ish v'achiv. If two men are fighting... Again, brother doesn't mean here brothers. Okay? Yeah, but it means, because he's killing them, they're fighting. But a brother, let's say, Achim call Yisrael, okay? Now, the Kaveh Eshes HaEchad, one of the two's wives, comes lahatzelis isha miyad makel, to save her husband from the intruder, from the guy that's hitting him, and v'sholcha yada, and she stretches out her hand, v'chzika b'mubusha, and she grabs him in his private parts. And that literally means in his embarrassed part of his body. Okay? So, let's see this. Simply, the Torah says like this. V'katzeisa eskapa, you cut off her hand, v'sochese nacho, don't have any pity on her. Right? But that's not what it means. It says, v'katzeisa eskapa, mumming. It means money. Now, she didn't necessarily hurt the guy, okay? If you know, it's basically, it's embarrassment. So therefore, as we'll soon see, what it means is like this. What's the connection between the din of Yibum and Chalitza? So the Mefarshim explained like this. Now, what's the connection? He says, because by Chalitza, the woman is embarrassing the guy. She's spitting in his face. She doesn't spit in his face, right? She spits on the ground. But she's spitting in front of him. So the Torah, so I would think I can embarrass somebody. If they're doing something wrong, I can embarrass them. Torah says, no. Right away, I'm going to tell you, by Chalitza, I'm telling you that you have to spit to embarrass the guy. But not by Chalitza. The Torah says it's forbidden. Okay? But the Katzei says Kapa, Rashi says clearly straight from the Gemara, Mamein the Mei Boshtei. Okay? Now, it's only financial penalty. This is the rule, by the way, that how do I know that there's a concept of if I cause you embarrassment, how do I know I have to pay damages like that? I didn't physically hurt you. I embarrass you. Yeah? One of the five damages, if you hurt somebody, is embarrassment. Which, by the way, even if I just embarrass you, I have to pay damages. But the Torah says like this. That it's wrong to shame another person. Okay? She has to, even though she's doing it to save her husband, but you don't embarrass somebody. And therefore, we learn out, this is the source, by the way, of that you have to pay embarrassment when you hit somebody and beat them up, or whatever
they
it is.
Kill them.
Huh?
They say you have to cut off his hand.
Well, we'll see in a sec what that means. But the Archaim says that this then only applies if the woman could have saved the husband in a different way. Let's see, the only way of saving the husband would be to do this.
Do what? So,
to grab onto his private parts. So then, the din is, she wouldn't have to pay it. Here the Torah is speaking, she could have done it another way, and she's saving her husband by embarrassing the guy. That's biblically forbidden. Okay? If she had no other recourse, and the husband was dangerously in danger, she would have been justified without having to pay any embarrassment. But the Torah says, the Katzeis Kappa, in fact, there's a lot of Gemaras discussing this, that how do we know it means money? I mean, maybe it means take a chop off her hand. Yeah. So it's the same thing like we have, you know, eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. It doesn't mean eye for an eye. We learn out from a lot of psukim, including this one. It says, Leisochei Senecha, and by Edom Zemimin, it says, don't have pity on them. Just like over there is money, here is also money. You only pay money. You don't get, God forbid, any other thing.
This, she wants to save his husband, you know?
Yeah.
She doesn't do anything wrong. She had to do what anything he wants to do. That's
no, but we're saying if she could have saved him a different way.
Could have hit him on the top of his head.
Yeah.
Can we say that she's an assailant? That's why you're allowed to kill her or...
No, she's not killing the guy. She's embarrassing the guy.
That's one of the parts that
by the way, you know the din was called the raid. If I see A going to kill B, I can kill A before he kills B. That's the din is, that's only if the only way I could stop him is by killing him.
Oh.
And if I see A running after B, yeah? And I could shoot him in the leg. Yeah? That he shouldn't be able to chase the guy? And I could have done it. and I could have tripped him or whatever, and instead I kill him, then you're a murderer.
But what if you say, you know, if I don't essentially kill him, he will kill me.
So no, then you kill him first.
I might as well do it.
It says in the Torah, Abala Hargucha, if somebody comes to kill you, kill him first. That's a given.
No, he's about to kill, he's hitting somebody to death.
But if I could stop...
This guy is really big, and if I provoke him, he may end up killing me, so I have to really...
No, you could only do it...
I have to hit him in a fatal manner so that he will not be able to retaliate. Can you do that?
Well, see, I mean, we're going to stop here because there's a lot of...
I have a question.
What?
If the fight between one lady and man,